Right, I'm joined in studio by Helen Mulcahy, Senior Staff Officer with the Council. And you may have noticed recently, we've all sort of noticed that some of the buildings, that these sort of, I don't know if they're exactly CPOs or what they are, but these forms have appeared on about five or six different buildings around town. And we just said we'd get Helen in just to sort of explain what's happening to us. How are you today, Helen?
I'm very well, Declan. Thank you. And thanks for having me on.
No, it's great to it's great of you to come in. I mean, there are sort of buildings around town, and I imagine in your job it must be very difficult because it does sort of drag the town down a bit, or the look of the town down a bit. And I presume this is a way to try and address that, Helen.
It is. I suppose just to clarify, Declan, they're not CPO notices that have gone on a couple of buildings. They're derelict sites notices, and what they do is they notify, I suppose the intention is to let the owner of the building know that we're putting that property on a derelict sites register. That doesn't necessarily mean it will fix the problem. What it means is that the property goes on a register and 7% of the market value of that property is levied by way of a penalty for every year that it remains on the register. So obviously there's an incentive for the owner to repair the building or pay the penalty, which it's probably cheaper to pay the penalty in some cases. Some of the cases that we have are particularly bad, and there is a very obvious problem with dereliction that we're trying to tackle, but it's an incredibly difficult task to do.
I would imagine it is, Helen. I mean, how do you actually, you know, because I mean, I know the buildings that will say have the signs up on them. There's other ones that could have signs up on them. How do you actually identify which one you want to go with, if you know what I mean?
I suppose it's a very onerous task, a very tedious one. In some cases, buildings aren't registered and you don't know who the owner of the property is. So that's how, like, there is a legal process that we follow. There's a Section 8.2 and a Section 8.7 notice that have to be issued on the owners of the property where you know the owner to be. And if you don't, then you attach a notice to the property itself, and then you go down the road of CPOing it, but that's at a very, very advanced stage, and it's an incredibly complex one, and it's the last step that we would take.
Yeah, and I would imagine just even identifying owners can be difficult at times.
Very, very difficult. Yep. Very difficult.
They could be anywhere. They could be,
Could be anywhere. And particularly, I suppose, when the Celtic Tiger came, a lot of absentee landlords, which we would know them to be, purchased properties down through the years in the Celtic Tiger era. And they just sit there. That's it. In many cases, the banks have taken them. And I suppose there is a process that the banks have to go through then to dispose of those properties, and it's just a legal quagmire, really, is what it is.
Yeah, I would imagine so, because once you get solicitors involved in these things, nothing against solicitors, but once that happens, you're dragged into sort of, things just seem to drag on forever, don't they?
They do, and I suppose, like, we have had success in certain areas, but there's other areas where properties are just actually so bad that they're very difficult to tackle. People just don't have the money to tackle them. There's very many of them, you know, that would probably cost significant investment. And to get that payback then for a landlord, or even to let it out or to sell it, the cost is huge.
Yeah. Now, you know, there are sort of grants, they say, sort of to do up. There was a sort of a trial thing around different towns in the country. I know Capoquin was one, I think. There was Banagher in County Offaly was one, where they sort of give grants for people to do up shops or houses in main streets to be lived in again. Is that a possibility here?
This is an election year now, so maybe that's a question that you need to be putting to a higher power other than me. But there was a grant a number of years ago called Living Over the Shop.
Yes.
And it was to tackle exactly what it says, dereliction, because everything on the ground floor looks fine and rosy, but if you look up, they're vacant or derelict or semi-derelict, and they need an awful lot of care and attention. But that was the Living Over the Shop grant. that's gone now, and it's something that would be a huge incentive to property owners and landlords to do up their properties if there is an incentive there for them. If a building is a protected structure, there's also grants available, but a lot of the premises on the North and South Main Street, for example, wouldn't fall into that category. But certainly the living over the shop grant was a huge incentive for property owners, and that's something that should and would be welcomed back.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's lots of things attached to it. I know when I was doing up my surgery, 30 years ago, the fire regulations alone at that time, now that was for a building that people were going to go into, but the fire regulations alone at that time cost me something like 32 grand. And that's 20, 30 years ago. So God knows what they would be now. I mean, with fire escapes and everything, I presume would be required for these sort of buildings.
Absolutely. And I suppose the complexity of it, that they're three-storey buildings for the most part. And the regulations, you can't get insurance now unless that you're ceilings are fireproofed and all of the, you know, I'm not well up on the specifics of it all, but the requirements are huge now, absolutely huge, and beyond many people's reach, you know. Like if you are in a position where you can refurbish the building, how long does it take to get your payback, even renting it out on a, you know, on an annual basis? It's very difficult to get that money back and to see the payback.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. But then the alternative is just leave it there as an eyesore, which is what you're trying to approach at the moment.
Absolutely, yes.
And, you know, before you put these sort of signs up on them, do you sort of do sort of gentle ways of sort of trying to get in touch with people and trying to encourage people to do stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the last resort for us. We do try and engage with all the property owners where we know them. And where we can contact them. It's not always possible. So we do, absolutely. And that's the approach we always want to take. We don't go in heavy-handed unless we, and I don't mean heavy-handed, but I suppose we don't go down the legal route unless we absolutely have to. It costs time and money for us as well, you know, and obviously the person on the other side. So that's the last thing that we want. You know, we want the easiest outcome and I suppose the most reasonable and sensible one.
Okay. And anything else happening with the council at the moment? Anything else we need to know about or anything else sort of on the cards? When is our greenway going to open, etc., etc.?
Well, I suppose the Middleton to Mogilly version, our section of it is open, and I actually came down the back way through Mogilly, which I normally do coming back from Cork City, and the car park there was packed. There's huge numbers using that section, so I'd say we'll be fully operational. I'm saying July, and I say that tongue in cheek because if it all goes wrong, but we're nearly there. Very nearly there, and it's going to be huge for y'all. Absolutely huge.
It is. I can't wait for it. And yeah. Loads of people can't wait for it. I'd love to get my bicycle out there. Mind you, there's nothing stopping me bringing my bicycle up to Mogilly and doing that other section.
No, yet, but the convenience of being able to get on your bike, cycle through y'all, onto the Greenway, you know, go to Killa if you want to get off in Killa. Like, you can do whatever you want to do yourself. You know, you can go to Mogilly or you can go on to Middleton if you're that ambitious. But, like, you know, there's lovely little short stops on the way. I suppose it's going to be, like, there's an awful lot of settling to be done with the Greenway, you know, and I suppose down through, over the passage of time, there'll be services provided on the track as well. So it's there's a lot of settling in, bedding in to be done, but it will be huge for you all.
Right. And I'll ask you this. I don't know if you know the answer. Anything about a sort of a trailer park or anything like that? You know, we've always sort of wondered about that. And certainly when you go to Cove and you see the vehicles parked up, it looks to be a magnificent service to be provided.
It is, and I suppose that happened by accident rather than design, to be honest with you, and it is fabulous, and I've been down there on many, many occasions. Of course, the location is wonderful as well. Look, a motorhome park is always on the agenda, and I suppose the Department of Tourism and Transport in particular have kind of always indicated they would support something. The difficulty is to find the right location. The Greenway obviously is a huge bonus to us, because very many of the people who use Greenways are motorhome
users. Yeah, they have bicycles users up in the back of their
motorhomes. And they have bicycles up the back of it, and that's the attraction. But I suppose it's finding the location, but it's something that's always on the agenda.
Maybe election. Maybe, as you say, maybe it's politicians when they come in. I should start asking them, you know.
Well, yep.
They seem to have, you know, well, they seem to hopefully be able to get things done. Look, Helen, Walsh, thanks a million for coming in today. And I know I hit you with one or two questions you weren't expecting.
Not at all.
Thank you for taking them on. It was great to have you in. And thanks a million for coming
in. Thank you very much.
Thank you.